Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm excited to share with you that we've created a new series. This is a topical series where we've taken previously recorded clips, compiled them by topic, idea, and particular concepts within the infinite banking footprint and the financial world broadly. Topics will include loans, loan repayments, paid up additions riders, other riders, dividends, long-term thinking, what could go wrong, what does go wrong within the infinite banking footprint. And I hope you enjoy listening. And it was created for your edification. Thank you. Frank sends an email. The phrase I'm trying to get more of an understanding of is the policy owner has more of an effect on the policy than anyone or anything else. Could you elaborate on that statement more? My idea of an effective use of a policy is use through policy loans and being capitalized enough to take advantage of opportunities. Is that within the range of reason you're alluding to at times? Well, there's two different things. I think that your idea is, I agree with your idea, being properly capitalized to take advantage of opportunities. Now, just let that stand alone. Being properly capitalized to take advantage of opportunities. Who doesn't want to do that? Who shouldn't want to do that? So I completely agree. Yes, you should do that. Everyone should do that. Be properly capitalized, period. If you are, then you can take advantage of opportunity. You can also vet opportunities. Everything walking down the street presenting itself as an opportunity is not an opportunity. Okay. So yes, you should be properly capitalized to take advantage of what you determine to be an opportunity. Yes. Now that separate, when Nelson used to say it, where I got it, I'm nothing original here. Well, I can't really say that. I have a lot of original things here. But I do give credit where credit is due. So Nelson used to say that the policy owner has a greater bearing on the outcome of a policy than even the life insurance company. So there's only three people in this agreement. The life insurance company issued the contract. The owner who owns it, maybe the insured and the payer, they could be four people, right? But there's three primary entities. The insurance company, the owner, and the insured, right? And the owner can be the same as the insured, right? So this trumps everybody else. So anything or anything else, anybody or anything else, yes. What does that mean? Okay, well, here's what that means is if you have the ability to pay a premium or not pay a premium, if you have an ability to repay a loan sooner than later, that is what affects the outcome. When the policy is built, it's did you pay as much premium as that policy allowed? And did you repay those loans in a timely fashion? It's your actions. And it gets down to exactly that, premium and loan repayments. I say all the time, premium, the problem is a problem. Premium is the solution. It may sound trite. It's absolutely true. Whatever your problem is, and I'm not, you know, talking about health issues necessarily, or whatever the problem is, it is, right? You work too hard. You work too long. You don't get enough. You don't get paid enough. You're undercapitalized. You know, the third-party lenders are breathing down your neck. Your partners are scoundrels. Whatever. The premium is the solution. Why? Because that is building capital that you have control of, right? Okay, I hope that answers your question, and thank you for it.
James, what is a PUA? A PUA is a paid-up additions. It is a rider to a policy. So in the infinite banking world, you have a whole life policy called a base policy most often. Then you have riders on top of that, right? Added riders, whatever you and your practitioner have decided is best for you and your family. It could be term riders. There could be other riders, other insured riders, disability riders. There's tons of other riders that can potentially be added to a whole life policy. The paid up additions is a rider. And when you pay a premium to the paid up additions, the majority of the premium goes to cash value immediately. It purchases some amount of paid up death benefit. So there's no future premiums due on that additional death benefit. It's paid up, and it's an additional, in addition to your cash values on your base policy. And it is a rider. So you should probably, young man, read Nelson's Becoming Your Own Banker. There's links in this Q&A how to purchase that and where to purchase that. And then while you're buying, while you're spending money, you should purchase his second book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth. All right. And then until you've read those two books, you know, you don't know what you need to know, what you should know about the infinite banking concept. What are the best strategies on owning multiple policies? It's a fair question. I would vary the due dates or the anniversary dates. You know, my birthday's in June, and I like to backdate to save age. So I bought an awful lot of policies in December, backdating to June, which just means I have an awful lot of premium due in June. You know, and it kind of accrues over time, and you wake up one day and it's like, my gosh, that's a lot of premium in 1 month. But I would encourage you to have, you know, policies on everyone that you have an insurable interest in. But you first start with yourself. You can have multiple policies on yourself. and then you may designate a particular policy for a particular purpose. But if you're an entrepreneur or business, you may designate one policy to, you know, pay your taxes. If you're a homeowner, pay your property taxes or finance automobiles, or this policy is designated for, you know, future education. You know, the kind of, sometimes we as human beings have kind of a compartmentalized way of thinking. And so I've seen lots of people buy policies with a designated purpose. You know, here's one particular policy. I'm not going to collateralize a loan whatsoever. That's going to be our quote unquote reserve, right? Another policy may be, like I said, to pay taxes. Another policy may be to finance automobiles. You do whatever you want, but I would vary the anniversary dates. Okay. Good question. This question is, what is direct and non-direct recognition, and how does each impact me? These are compound questions, okay? A direct recognition company, the short of it is they directly recognize an outstanding loan. They do not pay a full dividend, or they either pay no dividend or a reduced dividend on the loan balance that's outstanding. And I'm just say they directly recognize an outstanding loan, therefore they're going to reduce or not pay a dividend on that loan balance that's outstanding. A non-direct recognition company does not directly recognize an outstanding loan. They pay the dividend whether there is a loan outstanding or not. Now, I know in the big wide world of the infinite banking concept that agents and companies say, oh, it doesn't matter. Okay. Or you can make up for it. You know, if I have a large outstanding loan and I get a reduced dividend, I can make that up by repaying the loan at a higher interest rate when the company's charging me. Well, yeah, well, that would make up for it. But the bottom line, they're still not paying me a dividend on an outstanding loan. Does it make a difference? How is it going to affect me? Well, let's say that I get into a passive income in retirement. I can either withdraw my cash values, right? I can either withdraw cash values from the life insurance policy, or I can collateralize the cash values and borrow the insurance company's money using the cash values collateral. Now, let's say that I'm doing that, and the future is unknown. I don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, I hope it's all good and successful and healthy. But if I'm in the future taking passive income through collateralization, I am borrowing the life insurance company's money collateralized with my cash values. I want a dividend. So I want a non-direct recognition company, me personally. And that's what I want my clients to own, non-direct recognition. And this question, why don't mutual insurance companies have much cheaper premiums than stock-based companies? Well, why would they? I mean, the cost of insurance is, you know, equal to all life insurance companies. And what do I mean by that? Look, The mortality costs are the same across the industry, whether stock or mutual companies. The investment returns to the life insurance company are typically the same across all of the life insurance companies. You know, one life insurance company doesn't have, you know, all the financial gurus, and they get the best deals and make the best investments, right? The cost of distribution to the life insurance company, whether their products, and life insurance is a product, make no mistake about it. Is it benevolent? Yes, it is. But the company is in business like any other company in the free market. It is to provide a service and make a profit, right? So the distribution expense to the life insurance company is the same across the board, whether they distribute the products through banks, brokerage houses, independent general agencies, or independent marketing agencies, marketing organizations, an IMO, independent marketing organization. The point is the distribution, or whether they just do it through the mail only, right? The distribution cost is the same. The investment returns are essentially very similar. And over a long period, they're all very similar. So why should a company charge less for a product than another company? It's they shouldn't. Why don't they? Why should they? And it may be based on the idea that, well, a mutual company pays a dividend where a stock company does not. Well, and I don't know that that's true, but I think it is. Yeah, stock companies pay dividends. Absolutely. They just don't pay them to you, the policyholder. They pay them to the owners of the company, the shareholders. So a mutual company that pays a dividend, they're just paid to the policyholder. All right, so that's a bit of flawed thinking, but I hope that helps. What's the maximum amount I can put into a policy every year? If I reach that limit, would I have to open up a new account? Okay, and the new account is a new life insurance policy. These are not accounts, they're life insurance policies. And the short answer is yes. Look, if you're paying your premium up to the MEC limit, you don't want to go over the MEC limit if you can avoid it. And at the end of the day, a MEC is not the end of the world. But if you can avoid it, you should avoid it. And so if I'm continually, maybe a year or two, I'm paying a full policy premium up to the MEC limit, and I have additional capital that I should be putting somewhere, then by all means, that's a natural expansion of your system. So we don't have to force it. It occurs naturally as your thinking changes and grows and develops. When you see things you didn't see previously, you'll see where you can find premium dollars that you didn't see before. And expansion is okay. So the short answer is yes, buy another life insurance policy. If you have the capital and the means to do so, and there's a legitimate purpose, you know, we cannot negate the death benefit. And this idea that, you know, I want to buy the least amount of death benefit, period, and just focus on the capital accumulation, the cash value. I'm not saying that's bad thinking or flawed thinking, but we can't negate or not address our need for a death benefit. Now, I'm in complete agreement with my mentor, Nelson Nash, that when you focus on the infinite banking concept, when you focus on your need for finance, if you solve that need, your need for finance, it'll require so much death benefit that you can't get it past the underwriter. You know, Nelson Nash became a life insurance agent in 1964. He published the book in 2000, Becoming Your Own Banker. It was in 1980 whenever he discovered what was going on, the banking characteristics of a life insurance policy. Okay. So, you know, his experience should shave about 10 or 15 years off of your learning curve. My point being is it doesn't all have to take place tomorrow. Becoming your own banker. It is a process. Banking is a process. So we don't have to artificially build policies and make decisions to get this artificial head start. Just correcting our course is monumental in the result.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.